We're halfway through the summer now, a time when school and learning stuff can seem like a fuzzy memory. But a lot of experts say, hey, if kids sink too deep into that summer lull, they're going to lose some of that hard-earned school year learning, including their math skills. And what about the adults who haven't had math classes in maybe decades?
And that's where our next guest comes in. Jordan Ellenberg is a professor of math at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's the author of the book, How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking. Jordan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, first of all, do you believe in the summer math learning loss thing, or is it like a bike? Once you learn it, you never forget.
Well, it's kind of a mix. I think there's no question empirically that students come back to school in September with their skills somewhat behind where they were when they left in June. On the other hand, I think most things in math, in a way, you benefit from learning them again, from that repetition. I think you probably learn them better if you sort of go over those topics a second time. So you've forgotten a bit, but you haven't really forgotten, if that makes sense.
So is this something that we should, maybe parents should be thinking about in the summer, trying to restore that math? Or can we let the kids play hooky? They're going to catch up in the fall.
Well, what I think is this is an area where you really got to pay attention to your own kids' cues. So what I always say is to encourage your kids to do some extra math is always great. To demand probably is a bit of a problem. I think to expect is maybe a little bit in between. It's somewhere in between encouraging and demanding. So that's sort of where the boundary is.
Well, for you, math is fun, right? The word genius has been used to apply to you when it comes to math. So how do we carry that on into the summer for kids who want to have fun like you do and make it fun? Because it's summertime. No one wants to sit down with a math textbook and solve problems. They want it to be fun. Can we do that over the summer?
Exactly. So if kids are going to do math over the summer, I think the best way is a way that does not remind them of school at all, right? Because even kids who like school, I just talked to my son who's in third grade about this today. Even kids who like school do not want school to be 12 months long. They want to be doing something different in the summer. So I think there's a lot of games that have mathematical content that I love. Rush Hour is one that even very small kids can play, but older kids like it. Flow is another. Dragon Box is a third. These are all games that are free that you can have on basically any device if you don't mind your kids spending. I'm sure you guys are all great parents whose kids never touch a device all summer long, but in case they do, that can be a great way to do it. For something a little bit more formal and a little bit more academic, but really not like school, I would recommend the program Alchemus, which is at artofproblemsolving.com. This is a really amazing and well thought out and well curated selection of problems. And when you do them, you get kind of cool little badges and markers and stars and things that kids like. But
what is that one called again?
The website is artofproblemsolving.com. And this particular set of problems I like is called Alchemus, Alcumus. I don't know what that word means, but...
So what happens? What makes those good math practice problems, questions?
Well, I just think that whoever wrote them, the folks over at Art of Problem Solving, have really thought about questions that push conceptual ideas. And it's not kind of 30 copies of the same question, like the kind of classic school homework assignment. As I've always said, there is a place for repetition. There's no question. But there's also a place for a little bit more variety and a little bit more freedom from the stricture of school, where it's not teaching to a particular test that kids are going to have to pass or something like that. And I think I just think kids respond well to seeing a lot of different kinds of things.
And so those are things, it sounds like, that are online options. What about parents who want to do some math with their kids? Is there any way to do it together and make it fun?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, certainly I think all of the things I talked about are, they're going to be challenging for most adults too. There's going to be challenges there for them. I think, something I do especially with my younger kid, my daughter, who's four, is even just building it into the way you talk when you're like on a car trip and you're sort of figuring out, you know, what do you, again, your perfect children probably never say how long till we get there. But
are we there yet? Are we there yet?
But mine do. And are we there yet? Are we there yet? You can turn that into a math problem. Maybe make it like 5% less annoying for you, the parents. to calculate, like, how long until we're there. Like, what's the speed limit? How much should daddy go over the speed limit? Like, et cetera, et cetera.
Zero, of course.
Of course.
Don't break the law. Well, you know, when I was thinking of, you know, getting kids math practice, my thought was, you know, there are worksheets you can print off online with repetitions of multiplication and division, things like that. But in your book and your life, you're more trying to encourage mathematical thinking, not just the number drilling type stuff. What kind of things can we do, adults or kids, to try to embrace a mathematical mindset?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, and that's definitely true. The one thing I do in the book, and one thing I think that we can bring to our teaching, both as teachers in the classroom, those of us who are, and as parents, because we're all teachers in that respect, is to remember that mathematical thinking and mathematical problems are everywhere in the world, like not just on a worksheet. So that example I was just talking about, actually, we can play it out a little bit. You know, you're in the car and you try to figure out, you know, you can look at the mile marker, you can look at the exit number. First of all, you can figure out, you know, what exit you're getting off at, and on 94 they're numbered by miles, so you can figure out by subtracting how far do we need to go to get to the Milwaukee Zoo, to name a place that my kids always want to go. And then you could say, like, okay, if we go 70 miles an hour, does that feel safe? Like, how much will we gain from going 70 over 65? How much faster will we get there? That's somehow, that kind of thing, it ties it into a question that you actually have, not a question that that somebody imposed upon you.
And your kids think that kind of thing is fun? I mean, they're probably used to it because they've got, you know, mathematical
math dad.
Professor,
yeah.
Math dad. Or is it sometimes still a bit of work to convince kids that this stuff is worth doing and it's can be fun and useful?
I mean, as with most kids, I think some days the answer is one thing, some days the answer is another thing. And I think the main thing is just to kind of listen to your kids and be attentive to them. I think there is a danger, and it's something I always wrestle with, of you want to encourage and you want those math resources to be there for your kids. But if it becomes a chore, if it becomes something, we're going to do this whether you feel like it or not, I think there is a risk of making it feel like a chore for your kids all the time, and that's something that you really want to avoid.
Talking to Jordan Ellenberg, professor of math at UW-Madison, author of How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking, about keeping kids on the math train, not having too much summer learning loss, fun ways to get kids to enjoy doing math as opposed to imposing it as a bit of drudgery. Jordan, we talked to you quite a while back about your book, How Not to Be Wrong, and I seem to recall you saying, you know, the dreaded math question for any teacher or professor is, what are we going to do with this? And is that a part of what you're trying to do with that travel question, other things to throw at kids to show practical elements of the math, useful stuff, right up front?
Yeah, exactly. And I think the older your kids get, the more, quite rightfully, they're going to ask that, right? In my experience, like, you know, my oldest son is almost 10. I mean, in my experience, like a 6 or a 7-year-old, like, they mostly like to do what they're asked to do. Like, that somebody asked me to do this is like a good enough reason for them to like work a problem on a worksheet. But as your kids get older, they are going to ask that question. And I think parents should try to be ready with an answer, like ready with a supply of problems that they actually face that have some mathematical content.
And I want to talk a little bit about grown-ups, about adults, because mm-hmm. it has been years since my last math coursework. And if I think if we're put in front of, you know, an exam today, a math exam of a high school math, I would probably struggle. So is all hope lost for grown-ups? And is it even, you know, make the case that it's worth it for me to try to get up to speed again?
I mean, to me, I think we are in a time of the year which is actually, for political junkies, it's a great time, actually. Like, most people like either sports or politics, right? Most people like one of those two things. Those are both zones where you are constantly staring at numbers and the questions you face as you try to think about it. I mean, I actually love this. Every single, we have a new Republican in the presidential race today. I love this. The more, the better. The more there are, the more complicated the math is of trying to figure out what the heck is actually happening. And I think it's not just a matter of like who's number one in the current poll. There are like many, many combinations and permutations to figure out. And so I think if you care about that, it's a good time of year to think mathematically.
Well, do you think things like Moneyball in baseball, where there's all the statistics-based stuff, and then people like Nate Silver, the pollster, and a lot of mathy stuff on his new 538 website, is that inspiring the rest of us sports and politics junkies to maybe do math that we wouldn't have touched a while back?
You know, I think there's no question that that's true. I went to an amazing conference of digital journalists, of people who are really trying to put together quantitative thinking and traditional methods of journalism. That is like one of the biggest areas in journalism right now, of people who are young and in journalism school and are trying to get hired. Like, a lot of them, that is what they're doing, and it's like a pretty exciting time. They're just figuring out new ways to do things, and I think that's not a fad that's going to go away. I think it's going to be a fundamental part of the way we report newspapers, TV, the internet from here forward.
Where do you think we have room to grow in that area as a culture and, you know, in the media, in terms of incorporating more mathematical thinking into the way things are reported or addressed to people?
I think it's going to come on two sides. I think on the one hand, the gatekeepers, the editors, the people who decide what we see, they need to like really think about what high quality quantitative journalism should mean. I mean, one thing I worry a lot about is that because it's so popular, because everybody wants it, they will stick a pie chart or a map of the U.S. with colored states or whatever it is in front of every single story, whether it's meaningful or not. And, you know, that in some sense can damage people's impression of what quantitative journalism can be. So I am worried about the bad flooding out the good. On the other side, for the consumer, I think we need to work to educate the readers of newspapers and journalism more generally about how to read those numbers, how to push back on them, how to sort of figure out what seems trustworthy and what seems reasonable and where there are numbers that are left out or things that are missing.
Well, that seems like the ultimate answer to your what are we going to do with this question, is that we can, if we mathematically think, as you're encouraging us to do, we can weigh what the media tells us, what a politician tells us, what an advertiser tells us.
I mean, what I love is I think we're going to see a future where in an article you read on the internet, when it tells you about a poll or it tells you about a survey or it tells you about a result, that stuff is going to be right there, clickable, so that you can look at the data yourself. You can see all the numbers, not just the one that were chosen to be reported in this 1,000-word article, and look at them yourself. But of course, we have to build a world in which people feel confident in their ability to do that.
How do you think we're doing teaching math to kids these days? A big picture question for you before we let you go.
Boy, it's what a question to ask with a minute left. I think people are really thinking deeply about what to do. I think it's better than it was when I was a kid in many ways. I think the way we teach is changing with the times. There's more emphasis on probability and statistics, which there's no question that's a key mathematical skill for the future. It really wasn't in the curriculum, I think, when we were kids, or only very tangentially. Now it's a central part. I think people are thinking more about different styles of learning and different styles of teaching. So we don't do everything perfectly, but we're doing a lot right.
We'll leave it there. Jordan, thanks a lot for stopping by.
Thanks.
That's Jordan Ellenberg, math professor at UW-Madison and the author of How Not to Be Wrong, The Power of Mathematical Thinking. He joined us to talk about how to avoid summer learning loss when it comes to math.